This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Tomorrow on the program, we'll talk about the debate brewing over what's next for Iraq, U.S. plans to involve Iraqi exiles in an interim government while limiting the role of the United Nations is facing some criticism. That's tomorrow on Talk of the Nation. Right now, we'll turn to another war-torn country undergoing a rebuilding process. 18 months ago, U.S. forces ousted the Taliban in Afghanistan, the radical Islamic group that ruled that country for 5 years. President Hamid Karzai now leads the country. Thousands of U.S. troops help maintain stability and launch military operations against suspected members of al-Qaeda and remnants of the Taliban. There are also military units from many other countries in Afghanistan. In a few minutes, we're going to be joined by Afghanistan's finance minister, but joining us now is Barney Rubin, a senior fellow at the New York University Center on International Cooperation, the author of several books on Afghanistan, including Blood on the Doorstep, The Politics of Preventive Action, and he joins us from his office in New York. Welcome.
Thank you, Neil.
You were in Afghanistan just over a week ago. What is the situation like in terms of reconstruction and nation building?
Currently, actually, the situation is deteriorating, and it doesn't really seem that anyone has the will to step in and stop it. Even though over almost $2 billion have been what people dispersed, as people say, which means that the money's been transferred to accounts, most Afghans still say they don't see any concrete result of reconstruction except for a lot of international offices. Of course, there's been a lot spent on humanitarian assistance, but even the major roads are not being reconstructed, with one exception, and that's going extremely slowly. And the result is visible, really, in a rise of anti-government activity in a number of areas. You mentioned in the introduction that the U.S. troops are still battling remnants of the Taliban. But actually, the Taliban are resurgent in especially the southern part of the country and are engaging in more military initiatives than they were able to do last year. And that is partly the result of the discontent at the government's apparent inability to really deliver on reconstruction pledges.
Others say that that may be the spring offensive by the Taliban that many people were expecting, or perhaps also in response to the situation in Iraq. But as you mentioned, two U.S. servicemen were killed when their convoy was ambushed. Our International Red Cross worker was murdered, pulled out of his car, and shot to death. Is there a feeling that the government in Kabul is losing control, particularly in the southern part of the country?
I wouldn't say that it's losing control. The central government has not really ever managed to gain control directly of most parts of the country. It still has a great deal of influence and moral authority, and people look to it and hope that it will become more successful. But because of the warlords who control most of the country, and who control it, by the way, because of the assistance they receive from the United States, a thing that people often forget, the government has not really been able to extend its authority. And the U.S. position officially is that while it will help train and build a new national army, it will not be involved in the process of demobilizing and disarming these warlords, which is really now the main obstacle in the way of building a state that can deliver on the promises made to the Afghan people.
And the support for the warlords based on what, their cooperation against al-Qaeda?
Yes, that is, they were built up as our allies on the ground in the fight against al-Qaeda. They were the same people whose abuses had earlier led some Afghans to support the Taliban. And that may have been a temporary necessity. I thought at the time that there were other ways of waging that war. But nonetheless, I think it's now our responsibility to try to make a more serious effort to undo the damage that we've done. I should add in addition that the finance minister, Ashraf Ghani, who you'll hear from in a minute, has estimated that making Afghanistan into a stable country would cost at least twice as much as the amount of money that is currently going into it. Now, that's still a very small amount. It's less than $2 billion in the first year, and he's estimating it might take twice that amount. But no one seems to be making a serious effort to meet that target.
And finally, before we hear from Ashraf Ghani himself, as you hear about plans to rebuild Iraq and the kind of promises you're hearing from American and British and other politicians, what lessons do you think we should draw from the experience in Afghanistan?
It's very difficult to draw direct lessons because, of course, Iraq has oil money, and it does have a functioning state apparatus and a much more educated group of people. But I think the main thing is that rebuilding a country is not the same as providing humanitarian assistance. It's above all providing a legitimate and effective state apparatus. And unfortunately, the process of military occupation can undermine that even as you're trying to do it by detracting from the legitimacy of the political partners that you have.
Barney Rubin, thanks very much.
Okay, you're welcome.
Barney Rubin, a senior fellow at the New York University Center on International Cooperation, and he spoke with us from his office there. Now joining us from New York is the finance minister of Afghanistan, Ashraf Ghani. Minister, welcome.
Thank you very much.
I wanted to ask you first of all about the question that Barney Rubin raised just a moment ago, and that is you've said you're going to need twice the money pledged to get the job done at a minimum. Where is the rest of that money going to come from?
We hope that the international community would see the wisdom of supporting an agenda of stability and prosperity in Afghanistan. This requires a five-year perspective, and the bill for that five-year perspective would be about $15 billion.
We saw a wire story today on the Associated Press, and I suspect you've seen it as well, quoting President Karzai's brother, Ahmad Wali Karzai, as saying, "What was promised to Afghans with the collapse of the Taliban was a new life of hope and change. But what was delivered," he asked, "nothing. Everyone is back in business." Is that in fact the case? And if so, isn't that an indictment?
No, I think the picture is more complicated than that, in that there's an invisible part of reconstruction, which is about planning, mobilizing, building consensus, preparing the feasibility studies, etc. This work is gone on very successfully. It's culminated in preparation of a budget that the international community rallied behind on March 17th in Brussels. The other part, which is actually delivery, what the citizen sees, is of course not been forthcoming, because last year a very small portion, less than 20% of the entire amount of aid that was allocated for Afghanistan came through the government channels. So the parallel institutions, the NGOs, the UN system, private contractors, others, were the main deliverers of that assistance. And that assistance, as Barney Rubin mentioned before, was overwhelmingly concentrated on preventing a humanitarian tragedy. Now, preventing a humanitarian tragedy is not something for which you win kudos when the population has been promised reconstruction, but it was nonetheless a very significant achievement.
Would you anticipate now that spring has arrived that you're going to see the money that he talked about going into those accounts released to rebuild roads and highways?
I'm hoping very much that this will be so. We've presented a fairly ambitious plan. But, of course, promises in the aid system are not the same as delivery of cash. So, again, one should not underestimate that this requires continuous work to make things happen. And that requires an ongoing partnership, because the promise is not sufficient. Different countries have different budgeteers, different systems, different ways of releasing resources. So it requires an enormous amount of effort from the Afghan side to make sure that the promises actually are translated into concrete benefits for the population.
Well, how much money do you have right now for reconstruction?
Immediately at hand, close to nothing.
Nothing?
Yes, because everything depends. You know, the local revenue mobilization strategy is just being put into effect. This year, only $200 million would be realized from domestic revenues out of a recurrent projected budget of $550 million, and out of a total budget of $2,225 million. We depend very heavily on the international system for this, and the resources that are locked in and concretely available are about $150 million. The rest should be forthcoming rather than literally available for reconstruction.
So you're not worried that it's not there right now?
It comes through a variety of ways. What I mentioned earlier is that we need to keep the steady work and ensure that it actually gets translated. But this year, compared to last year, a lot more visible benefits would be delivered to the population. That they are not sufficient to meet the aspirations of the population is a different story, because the amount of aid that has been allocated for Afghanistan is a pittance compared to the needs of the people.
So if you're on track, I mean, what do you expect to receive this year, and what do you expect to get accomplished before next winter sets in?
what we expect to accomplish in our financial year, which is March to March, is about $2,000 million. What we expect to accomplish are a series of major roads, putting kids to school, close to 4 million kids to school, who had been previously denied schooling, particularly the girls, changing attending to health situation, which is some of the worst in the world, if not the worst, particularly in terms of child mortality, putting the basic infrastructure, roads, beginning of serious addressing of both drinking water and water for irrigation, and in terms of governance, those programs that enable the bureaucracy and the government to work in an effective manner, and to put together the measures that would enable the private sector to really come and provide the jobs that only the private sector can provide.
Let me ask you a question about security, and this again from the Associated Press story by Kathy Gannon from Kandahar earlier today. She quotes Khan Mohammed, commander of Kandahar's 2nd Corps, saying his soldiers haven't been paid in 7 months. His fighting force has dwindled. Then she quotes the Kandahar police chief, Mohammed Akram, as saying he wants 50 extra police in each district where the Taliban have a stronghold, but says his police have not been paid for months and hundreds have just gone home. Quote, there is no real administration all over Afghanistan, no army, no police, said Mohammed. The people do not want the Taliban, but we have to unite and build, but we are not. Could I get a response to that?
Certainly. The first is that there is no international funding source to provide the existing armed forces. No one, and I repeat, no one, is agreed to provide us with the resources to fund these existing forces. The number of these forces varies a great deal from one part of the country, and the other is that the degree of trust of the people in these forces is not very high. So when they're asking for support, sometimes the people that see these forces that have been untrained and sprang up in the wake of the overthrow of the Taliban as not being totally reliable. The third is resources that have been allocated for these forces from the domestic revenue, and in Kandahar they do have control of the domestic revenue, should have been allocated to them, and they need to ask the governor as to why it's not been reached. We have been shown receipts that they were paid.
I see. So this is you've been shown receipts that they've been paid, so
yes.
This suggests the questions should be asked elsewhere.
Yes.
I see. We just have a couple of minutes left, and given your experience as the finance minister of Afghanistan under very difficult and trying circumstances, again, as you hear in New York, you can't help but hear it, all the talk of Iraq coming up, two questions. First of all, is the reconstruction of Iraq going to be difficult for you in Afghanistan? Is it going to drain money away from your project? And second of all, what advice would you have for your counterpart in Baghdad?
Well, the second one is easy. Aid needs to be coordinated. There has to be a clear roadmap. All actors have to align around one single objective, which would be the building of a state that delivers credible services to the population and is accountable and transparent. That is what will gain the trust and win legitimacy. As far as the first question is concerned, we hope that the international community can focus on two problems. Afghanistan is very much the story of a partnership between the international community and the Afghan population, and its abandonment, like the way it was abandoned the first time, should that happen, would have tragic consequences, not just for the Afghans, but for the region and the world.
And finally, would you be better off, looking back on it, there's now debate over should the UN be in charge, should the United States be in charge, if you had a vote and were offered the choice, what choice would you make?
We've been very happy with our partnership with the United Nations. Mr. Lakhdar Brahimi is an exceptional man, a leader, and someone whose dedication really knows no bounds to the people of Afghanistan. His counsel has been wise and very much needed.
Ashraf Ghani, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Ashraf Ghani is Minister of Finance for the Government of Afghanistan, and he spoke to us from New York, where he's on a visit. NPR News will continue to follow developments in Baghdad throughout the day. Here are some of today's other NPR headlines. The U.S. is preparing for a provisional government for Iraq after Saddam Hussein. NPR's Mike Schuster is covering that. And in Washington today, the Supreme Court upheld a Virginia law that bans cross-burning. NPR's Nina Totenberg on that later today on All Things Considered. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.